You're listening to the Dead Ramones podcast. You know that already because you clicked on it on Spotify. Today, my guest is Steph Broadbridge. How are you going?
Good. We're on Spotify. How exciting.
Yeah, we got the Spotify deal.
Hell yeah.
We got the Joe Rogan deal. thanks so much for doing it today, Steph. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
Yes. You're a stand-up comedian.
Thank you.
It was so funny. It was such a betrayal. Like last week's episode was Andrew Hastings. Uh-huh. And I said that to him. I'm like, so you're a stand-up comedian, just trying to introduce him to the listeners. Yeah. And he's like, I guess. I'm like, that's what everyone else says too.
Yeah, that's so honest of him. That makes me like him more.
Yeah. you're a comedy writer and you are a, I had this in my head before. You do three things.
Do I?
Yeah.
What's my third thing?
I can't remember what the third thing was now. God damn it.
Graphic design?
You're a graphic designer.
Yeah.
You're also a musician.
I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Once upon a time.
I dabble.
Yeah, yeah. You've got shows coming up.
Yes.
For festival season.
Yes.
Yes. Do you want to tell people who are listening about that? Are you going to Brisbane? I think a lot of our listeners are in Brisbane.
Nothing.
You're not allowed to say.
No. I don't have that kind of thing. I haven't booked anything in, but I reckon I should, eh? I should go do something in Brisbane.
I reckon you could probably... Yeah, you should definitely do a good job.
Yeah, I'll ask.
Yeah. They'd be lucky to have you, yeah. Honestly.
I'll work it out.
But your show's called Best Dog Joke Ever?
Yes.
Is that what it's called? Best Dog
That's
Joke
what
Ever?
That's what it's called.
And a part of it is about your experience with online trolling.
All of it is about that.
I didn't want to pigeonhole you.
The whole show is about that.
Do you want to...
It's a digital murder mystery.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to tell a little bit of the story? Or do you think people should just go see the show and learn about it that way?
I was just trolled real bad and...
What was your crime though? Why were you trolled?
Oh, see, that's the mystery.
Oh, okay. You don't want to give that part away?
That's... I mean, you could just
Google
it.
Do you think it has anything to do with your gender identity? Do you think it has a little bit to do with the fact you're a woman?
Well, that's the mystery. Do you know what I mean? That's what I try to do. I try to work out whose fault it is.
Yeah. I think it was yours.
Spoiler alert, it's mine for being a woman. Thank you. Yes.
How dare you?
I didn't mean to.
I didn't have a say.
Well, you do now, don't you?
You're going to jump ship? Going to join the winning team? Have you considered it?
I've thought about it. I don't like their clothes. And the toilets. No.
Honestly, I don't like our clothes either, to be completely fair. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
What a way to start.
I think it's going to be a great show. Okay. I've seen some of the jokes. You are absolutely one of the funniest people I know.
Aww.
I mean, just give me a few minutes to, blow some smoke because I think you are a fantastic comedian. I'm really looking forward to seeing this show. I think all of our friends in our sort of circle of comedians, their best jokes were written by you.
Oh,
I think a lot of
not
you
not true. That's only true of some of
that's
them.
That's only true of these specific people.
Yeah.
List them by name.
And honestly, I don't think I am funny. Like I think I'm good at writing jokes, but I don't think I'm a funny person because whenever I give somebody else a joke, they get a way bigger laugh than I ever get. So I'm thinking maybe I just should stop trying to say them. And I should just
write them.
Yeah, she's like, hey, say this. And then they'll say it and then I'll do really well.
Have you ever thought about writing like a TV show or anything? Like your own project?
Oh, I wrote like with Dave Henning.
Yes. Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, I'm sure. We wrote a show.
Okay.
But we didn't do anything with it.
Oh, okay. That's the long story. We wrote a show and then we didn't do anything with it.
But we wrote the whole thing. We've written 8 episodes.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's insane.
Yeah. You know, lockdown was a lot.
Yeah, right. So what was it about?
It's called Comedy Pod. And it was Australia had tried to find their Joe Rogan.
Sure,
and
right.
And his name was Mike Fresco.
Okay. I love it already. Yeah. I love it.
And he broke his penis streaking in a cricket match and it went viral. And so they gave him a podcast and his job is to... It sounds so dumb.
Let's get it made, guys. Right. If you got money, if anyone is listening and you have money, let's make Comedy Pod a reality.
Yeah.
I reckon that'd be fun.
Yeah. His job was... he had to interview all these comedians, and then all the comedians would come on and they were all of the tropes.
Right, cool. And you would get comedians to play. Would it be like a Marin type thing?
Yeah, where it's yeah, like, yeah. It'd be like the extras.
So like Ballard. Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, cool. That's funny. Yeah. I like that. Don't give up on that. I reckon that that has a place.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. The non-committal.
If anyone wants it, they can have it.
I'm tired. Yeah. I'm not going to do this. Well, today we're talking about the year 1993 in hardcore punk.
Okay.
And we're talking about the album Slip by the quintessential, quote unquote, post-hardcore band Quicksand.
Right. Yes. Yes. There was Swimming Pool that was big in the 90s.
A swimming pool?
Wasn't that the album cover? It had a swimming pool?
No, this one is like the divers. It's got two divers on it.
Well, it was water-based.
Yeah, yeah, it is water-based, yeah. Absolutely. But no, like the album is like so 90s, like post-Pixies, like you know, that typewriter.
Yeah.
But you're a graphic, yeah, graphic designer. Yeah, and then like with the posterized, everything's like very MTV looking, yeah.
It's like grainy.
Yeah, yeah.
What if it was the past now?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fuck the future. Imagine, remember the past.
Yes.
But it's now.
Great.
Did you have thoughts on this album when you listened to it?
I didn't realize it was that old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Did I have thoughts? It was...
So, yeah, 30 years old. Well, it's 2024 now. But, yeah, it just had its 30-year anniversary. They did a big reissue of it.
Aww.
I think they did a reissue of it at 20 years as well. Like, every decade.
Are they Australian or...?
No. So, these guys are from New York.
Uh-huh.
They're all from the New York hardcore scene. Like, coming out of the 80s, they're all in hardcore bands. And then this was kind of like a departure from that. And it was... I think at the time it was so out of left field, and that's why they made such a big splash.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess like what I'm wondering from your point of view is like listening to it, did it feel remarkable at all?
No.
No. Okay. What did it feel like to you listening to it?
Okay. Listening to it, my first impression was these guys seem like they're quite good at their instruments.
Sure.
Which is not always the case.
Yeah.
Second impression was, do they all have to be playing every note they've ever known at the same time?
Sure. Sure.
For the whole album.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. They do. Yeah,
they do, in fact.
That was the style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I hated it.
Did you hate the whole album?
Yes.
Yeah, really?
Yes, okay. I did.
Yeah.
I found it impossible to listen to.
Why do you think it was that? What about it didn't agree with your own musical taste?
Yeah, just the fact that they were playing.
It was too much.
It was too much and there were no gaps.
Everything all the time.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Why?
Because I'd almost say like, but it's like a context thing, right? Because yeah. I would be like, as far as like hardcore music goes, these guys brought a lot of atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
Into an otherwise... like all out all the time kind of genre, and they actually brought a bit of space and a bit of like experimentation around that everything all the time. Like
what were they experimenting with?
I think it's exactly what you said. So so like I said, they came out of like hardcore, and I think a lot of hardcore, at least through the 80s, it was like a pretty rudimentary style of music. It was just like, here are the chords, we just play fast, loud, angry.
Yeah.
I think what they were experimenting with is just like being good at their instruments.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than just being
and
angry.
Time signature. They had
time signatures.
The opening track was in, I don't know whether it was 12/8 or
something like
6/8/3 yeah. 4. It was in 3 anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. Well, I'll give you some context for it. I'll give you some like, what were you doing in 93 actually before I do that?
What was I doing in 93? I was in year 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
What school?
Neutral Bay Public School.
Okay.
I don't know if your listeners know Ben Elwood, but we discovered recently that we went to the same primary
school
together.
Ben Elwood is another very funny comedian.
Yes. Yeah. So that's kind of cute.
And was he ahead of you or below you?
He was in year 6 and I was in year 5.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Did he bully you at all?
I don't remember him at all. And he doesn't remember me at all. Crazy. We were both unremarkable students. No, I believe he was quite bright, but I was a very unremarkable student.
Yeah. Primary school, you don't mix either. Grades don't mix in primary school, I don't think.
Oh, they did.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no.
No, but no.
What was I doing? I think I was learning that I wasn't smart. That was year five for me. Yeah.
But that's according to, that's so unfair. I feel like that's so unfair because I know you and I see you do comedy. I'm like, Steph's smart. So it's so unfair for your teachers to make you feel like you're not smart just because you can't do your fucking times tables or you can't.
I mean, I don't know if it was the teachers or the other students doing better than me. Sure, but right. Yeah.
Look, everybody has different learning styles, Steph.
Exactly. And mine is don't.
They didn't have Montessori schools in 1993. You would have thrived in a Montessori.
Oh, sorry about my nose.
It's okay. I won't use any of the blowing nose clips on social media.
That'd be great. Yeah, put this in.
I'll just do a compilation. I'll do a quick cut of you like wiping your nose.
What was I doing? I was in the band. I was in the choir.
What did you play in the band?
Flute.
You're a flautist.
A flautist. And piccolo, I believe. I had a piccolo at that time.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Were you a tiny little kid? Were you small?
I'm
imagining tiny little Steph with a tiny little piccolo. Like,
wouldn't that have been cute?
Elvish.
No, I was like a bloated...
Were you a chubby kid?
Prepubescent, chubby
nightmare. I was chubby.
Yeah.
I was playing euphonium.
Oof.
Oof is right.
At least yours matched.
Yeah, yeah, it is weird. Well, I mean, Lizzo's made it cool now, but I guess it's like 30 years too late.
Yeah, also she's like cool.
Yeah, but she's a big girl.
That's true.
Playing a flute.
Yeah.
Like if it was you now, as you were in year three, everyone would be like, oh, you're just like Lizzo. And you'd be like, yeah. That's
cool. I don't think anyone has or you ever will.
You don't relate to
say that to me.
You don't think Lizzo can you could have a nice sit down
meal? I don't think either of us have anything in common. She's confident. She's charismatic.
She's black.
She's black. She wears a lot of colors and tight clothes.
Yeah, right.
I think Lizzo and I wear the same size.
You're sizing up, she's sizing down. That's so funny. Yeah, yeah. I was a chubby kid. I was playing euphonium. I was in the band. I think I was in the choir as well, actually. That's wild.
Hell yeah.
But I was at Waterford West State Primary School in Logan, Queensland.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Is that a good school?
No, we had a lot of lone, hey, there's a strange man on the oval kind of situations.
Yeah.
Everybody stay inside. There's a weird man on the oval.
Nice.
A lot of brown station wagons.
Ah, yes.
Being like, if you see a brown station wagon, tell a teacher.
Stranger danger era.
That's only coming back to me now. I'm like, yeah, there were quite a few brown station wagons that we had to look out for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I know anyone who got molested, but I
guess
if
you are going to molest someone, don't get a brown station wagon.
Yeah, yeah. You just,
Will know.
Yeah, they'll know, dude. Everyone's like the white van, but for me it was always a brown station wagon.
It
yeah.
seems more ominous, brown.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Clever.
Yeah, crazy. But yeah, so that's what we were doing in 93. What these guys were doing in 1993.
Playing their instruments at the same time.
Playing every single note they've ever heard of. So the members of the band were, it was Walter Schreifels who had been...
Are any of them hot? Can I see photos?
Walter Schreifels is quite hot. Let me just get him up. Oh God, my computer.
It shouldn't be important, but it is.
We can come back to it because...
Okay.
I
shouldn't have asked you a question.
No, you're good. You're totally fine.
It will change whether I like them or not, though.
All of a sudden, you're like, actually,
it's kind of good.
I think he's kind of like
Your
style. That's him now.
Yeah, yeah.
Him as a 50-year-old man. 50-something year old man.
I don't like when 50-something year old men dress like they're not.
He's very New York.
Okay.
Very, very sort of aging, hardcore guy.
I just want to be like, cut your hair.
Long Island. That's him when he had short hair. Sorry, this is great for the listeners. Guys, if you're listening, just look up photos of Walter Schreifels and swoon over.
What's 93?
93. I think that's pretty close to 93.
Okay. There. Oh, yeah.
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 Here he is again. Very handsome man.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I think he's handsome.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And he was what?
So he was the brains behind it. And he was in a band called Gorilla Biscuits. We did an episode about Gorilla Biscuits. And they were just like, as these guys are the quintessential post-hardcore band, we kind of agreed that Gorilla Biscuits were the quintessential New York hardcore band from like the late 80s.
Who agreed?
Me and my guest, Danny okay. Chalmers, who used Got to work it. For a punk label okay. in Sydney.
So it's official then.
It's official. It's official, everybody. And so he was the brain. I would call him the brains behind this band, Quicksand. And he just keeps doing music. Like Quicksand have now reformed in like the late, I think in 2018, they reformed, started releasing new albums. So they're actually touring and they're an active band now.
When you say they're touring, where are they?
Toured Australia.
Uni bars or like what level are we talking?
Oh, I have a feeling I might be wrong on this one, but I'm pretty sure they played Crowbar when they came to Australia.
Right. Yeah. So the same 500? Size venues that we play.
That you play. I appreciate it. I do appreciate you trying to include me in that demographic.
We did one together.
Yeah, we've done one or two together. I've weaseled my way onto a couple of decent gigs.
Okay, 500. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, I think Crowbar's
about. I'm not judging, I'm just curious.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's in.
Because there's bands I've never heard of that are playing arenas. Do you know what I mean? So I have no idea.
These guys aren't. Like, they would play festivals, which is a different thing because it's like it's the power of 10 names rather than just one name.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're not Blink-182.
500's amazing.
Yeah. They're not Blink-182 playing fucking. Yeah. Whatever arena they're
got
playing.
Got it, got it.
Alan Cage was the drummer, and he was in hardcore bands. He went on to be in Seaweed, who are just like an alt rock band.
Yes, I'm loving these band names.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's funny when someone comes on, I'm like just throwing band names at you, and I'm like, I don't care.
No, I do.
But for the listeners. And then Tom Capone, who was, I think was in, he started the band Beyond, who are a Seattle band, I'm pretty sure, Beyond. I could have that. Fuck, it doesn't matter. And then also Sergio Vega was the bass player.
That's a great bass player name.
Yeah, and he was in New York hardcore, but his career after Quicksand is kind of more interesting because in the late 90s, he filled in for Deftones,
who I'm
sure you would have heard of.
No.
No? No, you haven't even heard of them?
I don't listen to music.
They're like... I don't listen to music or anyone.
Yeah, I know. I listen to podcasts.
Yeah, fair. Well, Deftones, they're like a corporate, like, nu metal band. By corporate, I mean like major label kind of nu metal band and still going. And he was a fill-in bassist for them in the late 90s when they were sort of still emerging. Then joined properly when their full-time bass player passed away.
Oh.
But then also then recently got kicked out of the band because of like legal contract,
Ooh.
Major label type stuff,
Love
like
it.
Money stuff.
Yeah.
Which is just so foreign to, for me, being someone who played in like punk bands, I'm like... That is so foreign to me.
Yeah.
To be like playing in like an alternative or like a, yeah, some sort of like metal or hardcore whatever band and be like, oh, I had to leave because the contract wasn't right and my manager didn't think I would. Like, I'm like,
yes.
You got contracts?
It's
what are you talking
all a
about?
Lie.
But like when you're talking about Deftones, it's like millions and millions of dollars.
Okay.
And it's like songwriting credits, all that sort of shit. So
were they still writing about being underdogs though? Because that sucks.
No, I think Deftones, they're almost like...
It's like when Dave Chappelle pretends he's still black. You know what I mean? It's like, come on, man.
Yeah. You know, I mean, technically...
You're Dave Chappelle.
You're not living the life, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not white. I'm not saying you're white. I'm just saying you're Dave Chappelle.
Yeah. Well,
that's all I'm saying.
I'm saying you're white.
Guys, listen and subscribe. Hit that like button. But don't rate this episode.
Sorry.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, yeah. It's that kind of thing where it's like, I guess like you grow this fan base because of this like angst ridden kind of like, yeah, yeah, I'm a teenager and life's hard
yeah.
and stuff. And then you're all of a sudden you're 40 and you're still like, yeah, my girlfriend left me.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
it's a weird,
weird.
It's a weird one. But yeah, so all I'm saying is the members have this pedigree to them, like even
right.
after the fact and before the fact, they've got like these like credits, like the street cred almost of like being in these like really important DIY bands,
yes.
basically.
Yes.
And then Quicksand happened and basically it just exploded. It was like that post Nirvana landscape where major labels were just taking their money, choosing any sort of DIY band from a local scene and just throwing
trying
it against...
Trying to create the next one.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, if we... And it, like, if it happened with Nirvana, it can happen again. And it just never happened again.
Right.
They never found like another DIY punk band.
This is what I will say about Nirvana.
Yeah.
They left some notes out during their music. Did you notice that? Like...
In what sense?
Like sometimes there would be gaps in the sound.
Right. So they didn't play enough notes, but Quicksand played too many
notes?
No,
I'm saying they played the right amount of notes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I get it.
Yeah.
These guys could have taken some notes from Nirvana and just like cooled off a little bit.
Yeah, they just needed someone to be like, have you tried removing some of the notes?
God, that's so funny. But so these guys... Yeah, like it was that post Nirvana. Yeah, they just got picked up by Polydor Records. It's like major label, and just like, oh, will this be the new Nirvana? Like, we're gonna make millions and millions of dollars, and they weren't.
Yeah,
they weren't. Like even today, they're still like somewhat underground, but it's like a cult following type thing, I would say.
But yeah, very good at their instruments.
You're very good at their instruments. I've just got some notes here just to like. At the time, so the first song, that first track called Phaser, that became a hit on college radio, just on campuses. So
that was my favorite one.
Yeah, it's because it's the you weren't fatigued yet.
Yeah.
It was like the first one you heard.
It was also, it just sounded slightly different to the other ones.
Yeah, that one's like a soup. It sounds super grungy to me. It sounds like of the time kind of thing.
But the 3-4 energy made it feel slightly interesting.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And what else?
I don't pretend to know anything about music, just as a disclaimer.
No, that's okay.
All of this is Steph's opinion.
the opinions expressed here are Steph's.
I failed my jazz degree, so don't.
You failed your jazz degree?
Yeah, I didn't finish it.
Oh, you didn't finish it. That's different.
Well, I didn't finish it because I failed.
Oh, okay.
I did the 3 years. I just didn't complete everything.
Right. Okay. I see. But isn't jazz all about like playing too many notes as well? Like,
no, it's about playing the rest. That's what jazz is.
Playing the rest?
Playing the rests.
Oh, right. Yeah, I see. I see. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the notes you don't play.
Yeah.
All right.
It's about the notes they're not playing.
Jazz is about making the room full of people not be able to follow what's happening. It's a game.
It's a game?
Yeah. This is my understanding of jazz, right? So you have a crowd.
As someone who failed their jazz
degree. Yes. And your job as the jazz musician is to get the crowd to not follow what's happening.
Right. And they have to pretend like they get it.
Is to try and follow.
Okay.
So you spend the whole time on stage trying to fuck it up.
Yeah. Okay. But,
yeah.
Did you improvise a lot with like bandmates and stuff? Or?
Yeah, I was in a band.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You don't want to give me any details on that?
The other musicians in the band were very good.
You feel like you weren't?
I'm not.
Were you playing flute in the jazz band?
Singing.
Oh, right. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. That was your instrument of choice, your voice?
That was my instrument I got into jazz school with.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then failed out of with?
Yes. I did well in performance.
Okay, cool.
I failed history.
Oh, I see. All right, yeah. History's boring. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
So I will not retain any of this.
Oh, that's okay. You don't have to. You just have to be here to tell me.
I'm
tell
sorry
us how,
to interrupt. What were you talking
you
about?
Hated. Oh, I'm just trying to say, like, at the time, so, like, is like I said, I was kind of run off my feet this morning and my notes aren't in order. But, like, let's start here. Like, early 90s. This is from The Quietest. I'll put the references in the show description. But here's just a quote. Bands had too many influences and not enough coherent fluidity between them. But then Quicksand released Slip and it really did seem a little different. Like, I think a lot of people would disagree with you. Like most of the reviews and stuff like this are like, oh, this is a perfect record.
Okay.
This is like one of the most influential records in alt rock. This is like, like they changed the scene. And like, I think what that quote says is like, in the early 90s, it was like this melting pot of influences because it was mainstream meeting like underground and just like all this kind of incongruous stuff coming together. And the bands would release albums that just kind of didn't make any sense.
Right.
But Quicksand managed to bring in this like this hardcore punk pedigree, combine it with like a metal influence, but then also the context of like that post-grunge, post-Nirvana sound.
Uh-huh.
But they made it a whole thing and it was like definitively Quicksand.
Okay.
And it was unique.
It does feel like Quicksand.
Yeah. You mean like the matter?
Like I'm trapped in something and I can't escape it. Was that the intent?
I don't think so. People are going to be
do
so
they have
mad
hardcore?
At you,
Sam. I know. I'm like, do they have hardcore fans that hate me?
No.
Okay.
I think that's funny.
Bring it.
It's interesting because like another quote, like the metal influence on this album is interesting not for the sound, but in terms of the guys, like the type of guys who are in it.
Uh-huh.
And we've kind of established this over the.
The vocals are quite metal. Is that correct?
Metal. And I think the guitar. Yes, I agree with that because it's like, it's melodic, but it's still aggressive. Like that's very metal to me. Like he is singing, yes. But it's very aggressive singing,
yeah.
Which is, to me, that's heavy metal. Like,
yeah. It's one sort of volume.
Yeah. And what we've established over this kind of podcast is like hardcore punk is less to do with the sound that you're hearing coming through the speakers and more to do with the attitudes of the people in the band.
Right.
And maybe even the subject matter that they're singing about. Because like a metal band will sing about, this is from my friend Stevie Scott, who I was talking to the other day. Like a metal band might sound the exact same as like a contemporary hardcore mm-hmm. band. Like the two bands to you, especially like to your ears, like, oh, these bands are the fucking same. But one is singing about like dragons and demons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then the other one, the hardcore band, is singing about their internal demons, like their mental, like, you know, like the demons that play like real life stuff, like street stuff.
Is that how like girls are bisexual now, but they live like a straight person, but it's different?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. It's a good.
It's about good whether your hair is blue or not.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. Okay. I think you can.
Yeah,
I'm
following.
So yeah, what I have here is like in the 80s, so before this all happened, ideologically, this is so some of these quotes are so funny. I don't think about it when I take them out because I'm like, oh, that's a good point. But like just the wording of this. In the 80s, ideological skirmishes between hardcore and metal factions were not uncommon. So there was like this division.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Nirvana broke, like punk broke into the mainstream. And that's what I mean. Like it's kind of like the levees just came down and these styles just mixed.
Okay.
And there were no longer these kind of artificial walls. And people were like, it's almost like people were suddenly allowed to be like, oh, I actually do like this. I actually like this the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm just going to have to blow my nose.
No, of course. I'll keep giving these boring.
I don't want to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry.
So this band, basically, like, it was just this new landscape. And like, so these guys went from being, like, underground hardcore dudes just mm-hmm. doing everything by themselves. And all of a sudden, they were touring with big bands. They were touring America. They were touring Europe with bands. I don't know. Stop me if you know one of these.
Okay.
But this will be more for the listeners. They were touring with bands like Helmet. They were touring with bands like Fugazi, Rage Against the Machine.
Yes.
Yeah. Anthrax, White Zombie, and The Offspring.
Okay. I knew the two that I'm expected to know.
Yeah, yeah. But like, point being is
big,
like...
Big bands.
Mainstream bands. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. And so all of a sudden they had this like audience that they never had when they were in Gorilla Biscuits or in Youth of Today, mm-hmm. just playing in the New York clubs kind of thing. And like, you know, hiring a shitty van and driving around the country and playing to 80 people in each city. Yeah.
That's exciting for them.
Yeah, yeah. But unfortunately, I don't know if you'll be happy. I don't know if you'll take any sort of schadenfreude for it in this. Despite the major label kind of support of this album, it didn't take off. It wasn't a Nevermind.
No.
It didn't happen for them.
Good. I mean,
good.
Not good. I want everyone to succeed. It just wasn't my taste.
Mm-mm. But it's kind of funny, and again, this reflects the type of people they were, or at least where they came from. Walter, the main songwriter,
yeah, okay.
and
so
singer,
what
he
I
was
got
like,
from
"If
it,
we were
I
trying
to write
singles,
I did
read a quote from Walter,
right.
But like that's
what
the thing. It was like just like the raw emotion and like the earnest expression of it, and I think at least for me, when I didn't hear it at the time. I heard it maybe 15 years after it had come out, uh-huh. maybe 20 years after it had come out. But all of a sudden it was like, you know, hardcore punk and then like extending beyond that, like bands like Rage Against the Machine, stuff like that. It's all about like kind of issues, like uh-huh. social issues, political issues and stuff like that.
Also, the lyrics were important.
Yeah. And then Quicksand were like, it was like this personal, it was more introspective and it was more emotional, and but without being emo music.
Yes.
So it's still aggressive, but it was like kind of like this vulnerability in aggressive music, which then extends to the people who are influenced by them, like bands like Deftones that I mentioned before. There's another band called Glassjaw that you could draw a direct line from Quicksand to the band Glassjaw.
Okay.
That's what really spoke to me when I first heard it. And also like the musicianship, like that focus on like just writing interesting parts and like bringing in these other musical influences that weren't just purely hardcore punk. Yeah. And I was like, for me, I was like, oh, what the fuck?
Yeah.
This is like, it's like I'm coming to this 15 years late, but it still feels new to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I didn't know it was 93.
Yeah.
I would have guessed like 2010.
And I would say bands today still kind of strive for the sound that they achieved on this as well. So even though it's a 30-year-old record.
Why? No, I'm kidding.
No. To me. But like honestly, to me, it's like I mean the quality, not like the actual songwriting, the audio quality of it or the tone of it. It to me it was like it felt very organic, like rather than like this kind of synthetic guitar tone that you can get in metal music and stuff like that. That feels like kind of distant. Like the guitar tone on this is like it's very raw. Which it maybe is part of like the barrier to entry for someone.
It who's seemed not like with they it. Would be if you watch them live, it would sound almost the same.
Yeah, yeah, and that is definitely that the type of music that I like.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But then so did Cat Empire, so that's not necessarily a compliment. What?
What do you mean? What? That's so funny. But then again, so did Cat Empire. I think it was just like it was everything happening at the same time, and it's kind of hard for me to talk about because it was like I feel very close to it, like in terms of influence, and it's almost like it's hard to take a intellectual or like a historical viewpoint of it. I think that's like the struggle for me.
Yes.
On this episode is like
the nostalgia.
Yeah, a little bit of nostalgia, but still like I listened to it over and over again before we did this. And I'm just like, fuck yeah, this rocks.
Okay.
Like, this rules. Like even in my late 30s, I'm still like,
yeah.
Oh, this album means a lot. And I'm still taking a lot from it. And
that's nice.
And I would do a band if I had time and knew enough people to do it. I would do a band that sounded more or less exactly like Quicksand today. I would happily do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember like.
You could open for them.
Yeah.
At one of those 500 seat venues.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
The way I found them, it was definitely through Rage, the music video.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just one of those nights where they have the guest programmer on Rage and it's like, oh, this next song, blah, 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 blah. Like they talk about how much it means to you. And then it was a music video for Dine Alone. Which is, I think, track 3 on this album. One of the ones that you probably skipped through.
I listened to the first 2 minutes of it.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was that song and it was just like, what the fuck is this? Like I was just like, as like a late teens, early 20s, I was like, what the fuck is this? This is so good. Mm-hmm. And it was, that's the interesting thing because like in the 90s they were, you know, they had this major label backing. They were getting played on college radio, MTV.
Right.
So they had a music video. So it's weird to... They were definitely my gateway for more hardcore, like the stuff that came before them even. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. It's almost working in reverse where it's like I found this mainstream band and they went backwards into the DIY just due to...
Isn't that how most people would though?
I think... I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually don't know. I think a lot of people like suburban kids would yeah, and that's who I was. And I think that's the influence that they kind of had when you look at kind of the genres that came after it. Genres like nu metal and bands like, you know, your Limp Bizkits and your those sorts of bands from that part of the world.
Yeah.
That's a suburban type of music. It's kids who didn't grow up in a scene. They didn't grow up attached to the subculture. They just heard the sound.
Yeah. And related.
And did that without any actual kind of, I guess the word would be authenticity, like the cultural authenticity of, which keeps coming up a lot in these discussions. Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I mean like the difference between a band like Deftones, who this guy actually, you know, the bass player went on to play with. The difference between a band like Deftones and a band like Quicksand is less, I really think is less in the sound and more in their lineage.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So these guys in Quicksand, they were from the city. Mm-hmm. They were from New York hardcore. They lived in the city. They played in these bands. They were surrounded by all these other bands. They had this sort of cultural understanding, like this language, this dialect.
Yeah.
It was a culture, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Deftones started, and it's sort of like, I think, I don't have the facts here. I'm just using them as an example. But like,
yeah.
I think even from, you know, like from my radar or like my, you know, bullshit sensor or whatever. Like I quite like Deftones. I think they're a good band. I enjoy listening to them. But you can sort of tell that they were just sort of suburban kids who had MTV or like went to their local record store and like they didn't grow up in the scene.
Yes.
But they liked music.
Okay.
So that's kind of the difference. Like the lineage and like the family tree, like the musical family tree, I think.
So do you think like, because I don't really, this is something I never really got into
and
my sister really got into.
Yeah.
She loves, well, maybe not anymore, but she loved bands.
Yeah.
Just the vibe.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Just how they dressed.
Yeah.
What they did.
She had the posters up on her wall, like from Blunt magazine and stuff
I don't know if she had posts, but she loved bands.
Older sister or younger sister?
Younger.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I liked songs.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I never got into bands and the idea of a band.
Yeah, okay.
And what that meant.
Yeah.
Because it is more, it's so much more than the song, right? It's about an identity.
Yep.
And yeah.
Yeah.
What you wear and how you act and how you feel about and politics and.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all of that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because like, you can just have people who, I know lots of people and I think that's why songs exist to be enjoyed.
Yeah.
So I'm not putting any, like by doing this podcast, I'm not putting any value judgment on that. It's like, if you enjoy a song, you enjoy a song. You don't have to be like me, like an autistic nerd about, like when I first heard Slipknot, I found out, because like they all had numbers, like there were 9 people in the band. I found out which person was which number and which mask they had and all that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
I was like that level, which is exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, but that person is that number. He plays this instrument and his real name is this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important to me to know that.
Yeah. See, I've never cared about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you can go, I think what happens is like a step further beyond that is then the scene and the subculture.
Yeah.
And so like I'm invested in the band and then I'm also invested in the wider subculture that band came from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so you had the barrier between you and your sister, which was like, I like songs, she likes bands. And then I guess the barrier between like someone like your sister and me is like, I like the scene. I like the culture.
Yeah, she was like that as well.
She was. Yeah, okay, right. Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Did she go to hardcore shows in Sydney or anything like that? Or
I didn't think she was into hardcore. She was into other stuff.
Yeah, cool.
She dragged me to a Bright Eyes concert recently.
Oh, right, okay.
And it was standing only and I was furious.
Emo.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, I liked
completely unmoved.
I'm watching a guy pour his heart out. I like three of the songs. Do you know what I mean? I don't care about.
I love it. I love it. That's so funny.
Yeah, I just thought I should say that, and also as another disclosure, just to be clear to any audience that you have, I tried to make music a career for 20 years and failed. So if there's any negativity and resentment coming off me, that is correct.
Yeah, you are reading me correctly. Yeah.
I am an angry, bitter, rejected, failed musician.
You're not failed. You've incorporated it into your comedy. You're a musical comedian.
Yeah, but come
on. I'm so sorry.
Come on. Incorporating it into your comedy. No.
No.
No, 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 no. That's not a thing.
I like the song you closed your last show with, The Hot Chick Tired Mom.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
It made me very emotional, actually.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was a bit much.
No, it was good. Yeah, so basically these guys, it's interesting because like you have that importance placed on the culture and these guys were breaking out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They were like breaking into the mainstream and like that is what allowed them to experiment and that's what allowed them to broaden their horizons musically. It's interesting because it's like they're doing this thing that seems like a little bit less... It's not what they're doing, but they're becoming a part of this wider zeitgeist that is a little bit, just by nature of it, by the broadness of it, a little bit less sincere than what you get in these small local scenes.
Yeah.
But that allowed them to do the weird shit that they did as well.
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. So Walter Schreifels says this. He says, after Nirvana, anything really seemed possible, says Walter. Labels suddenly didn't know what the answer was. Do people want Dinosaur Jr.? Is that it? Do they want Melvins? These are band names. I'm so sorry. but as the
they
decade...
They sound like kids' TV shows.
Yeah, yeah. But as the decade went on, it turns out that people didn't actually want that. What people want is Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
Do you remember that song Fly?
I do.
Yeah, yeah. Which is so interesting because it was like, oh yeah, Sugar Ray are technically a rock band, but like it's not fucking Nirvana. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that's kind of what I said before, but like I think that's just sort of the element of trial and error, like I said, that allowed them to grow into what they were.
Look, I don't care what kind of music you're into. Give me a hook or I'm not listening.
I think there's like, so for me, this record is about like the riffs.
There's definitely riffs, but there's no hook.
My favorite.
Sing me one of their songs right now. Go.
I could hum you the riff to Unfulfilled.
Exactly. But that's not. But that's every
everyone
song.
Everyone turns off the. That's the sound every of everyone song. Turning off the podcast.
There's so many songs that sound like that.
I like that line in Dine Alone where it's like, I actually don't know the lyrics. It's like something about the couple next to me. Boop, 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 boop.
No. I just want to fly.
Point taken. Honestly, it's a banger. It's a banger. Someone who doesn't even listen to music knows Fly.
That's
by Sugar Ray. Absolutely. Yes.
That okay, is a good hook.
Point. Very good point.
I'm probably the worst person to have on this.
No, it's great. So you're the best person. I love it. I like. So the point is like, how alienating is this to you? Me trying to talk to you about the scene and talk to you about how important this fucking record is.
Yes.
Do you feel like that just pushes you further away from it?
No, I'm interested. I like knowing things, but then I'll listen to 702 and like while a guy's describing the best stained for a deck that gets a lot of sunlight.
This is a podcast, right?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't really, I'm excited by anything I don't know anything about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is absolutely like my little special interest podcast. Yeah. It's me nerding out, but it is also me trying to like, you're like the perfect guest because it's like, this is like a hot, this is this microcosm.
Mm-hmm.
It's like some people's whole world. And what's interesting is like, you still have to be a human. Like I still have to be in my late 30s and be a human in the world.
Yeah.
Even though I just came out of this weird little like alien kind of microcosm of hardcore. And now it's me trying to not only make sense of it, not only trying to explain it to you as someone who never went into it, but like by doing that, it's kind of an example to myself and to everyone that I grew up with in this scene, that it's like, yeah, it was so important to us, but it means it means everything, but it also means nothing.
Uh-huh.
Like it made me who I am, but like, what does that mean in the context of the actual big wide world, I guess?
Yeah. Nothing. But that's interesting.
Because like, there's no real answer.
But
it kind of leaves you at this brick wall. It's a paradox,
no,
right?
No, really, because it was your world.
Yeah, yeah.
And all you've done is sort of zoomed out a little bit.
Yeah. I just like the investigation of it. And I like the history
but
of it as
well. But that's
just
getting older as well, you know?
Like, exactly.
Because in your 20s, you're living in the world. And then in your late 30s, early 40s, you're not living in the world anymore. You're kind of one step removed, watching the world go by. And like, I think I'm still following most of the things.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't really, I'm not in it. I'm just sort of watching it.
Yeah.
And then I think as you get older, it's that again. You're just like, I don't even know what they're doing in there.
You're watching other people watch TikTok.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know what they're doing, but
That's what I'm doing now, to be
honest. I know I hate it. And I know that I'm going to talk about how much I hate it on Talkback Radio. And then I just think, do you know what I mean? And then you die. And I feel like that's what life is.
So absolutely. Things just keep happening. Like
you're in the zoomed out, I'm watching it and I'm across it, but I'm not really in it now.
Yeah. But I think that I definitely agree with everything you just said, but there's also this other part. There's this other part to it as well, where it's like bringing, I think it's worth examining different subcultures, and I think it's worth
bringing
this, like, this was such a big change in music that most, like, normal people wouldn't know about.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know about this album.
Yeah.
They know about Nevermind, but it's like, what did Nevermind do?
Yes.
And Nevermind did this, basically, you know? So, like, yeah, Nirvana were a really, really important band, and they were an amazing band, and they were really, I think that they were really good. I'm not trying to put that on you. I understand you don't listen to music.
No.
But there's also this whole other thing underneath that was happening in the years immediately after as well. And I think that's what this,
and it wasn't just music, it was like fashion as well.
It was fashion, it was everything. Yeah.
Nevermind is the reason I still like when a man wears a cardigan.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. 30 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still see guys dressed like Kurt Cobain and I'm like, that's hot.
Yeah. So more about the actual sound of the band. Again, this is from Walter Trifles. We're definitely an amalgamation of all the aggressive stuff that's come out of New York, but we wanted to be a bit more cerebral.
Okay.
Do you have a reaction to that? Do you think it was cerebral?
I feel like no one in that band had any kind of neurodiversity.
Do you think that's true?
Maybe it's just like, okay, I'm not officially autistic, but I can't deal with like a lot of loud noise.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I get that.
And there was no break from the loud noise. Right. So I hated it. But there could just be, it didn't feel cerebral to me. It felt like I couldn't concentrate on anything because it was all happening at once.
Interesting.
To be fair, every song, they didn't all start at once.
Yeah. Because I've met this guy and I don't want to put anything on Walter.
Okay.
But he is a bit of a weirdo.
Yeah?
He is a little bit of a weirdo. Yeah. Weird. In the best way.
Weird how?
I met him when I was in a band called Values Here.
Called what?
Values Here. A melodic hardcore band. Values Here was an old Dag Nasty song.
Okay.
It was a good band. I really like the band. I listened to one of our old songs the other day, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And Gorilla Biscuits, which was his band before Quicksand, they were doing a reunion tour. They were touring Australia. It was 2006. And we opened for them. And I met him outside the venue.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I was trying to, like, it was a few of us and like just being like, hey, man, blah, blah, blah. But he was just like singing silly little songs and doing silly little dances and not really addressing any of us. I'm like, God. Oh, you're a little freak.
Yeah.
In a way that I really enjoy.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I think he was probably just deflecting, like he didn't want to talk to weird Australian fanboys.
What does cerebral mean? I don't even know what that means.
I would say that, I think he means intellectual. We're trying to make intellectual music.
It was intellectual.
Yeah.
I felt like it read as
intellectual. It's very musical.
I don't think musical and intellectual are the same thing.
Right. But like the way they did the arrangements and stuff and like syncopated beats, all this, what you're saying is noise, I think was like...
It was maths.
A bit of maths. Yes. There you go. Yeah. Yep.
I don't like music that's maths.
It wasn't... Yeah, they weren't... They're not pop hits, you know, which is probably why it didn't really succeed in the mainstream.
Yeah. It was a lot... There was some difficult maths in this music.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Which I appreciate as someone who studied music.
Yeah.
But I don't like...
Sure.
As someone who doesn't listen to music.
Absolutely. That's fine.
But it was intelligent.
Yeah. Well, he says, he goes on to say, aggressive music is great, but we want to make songs that have a point as well.
Okay.
And that's a quote from 93. That's not a quote from him today. That's a quote from him when it came out.
Yeah, that would be embarrassing really if he said that now.
But he's really talking up the album when it came out. He's like, we're better than everyone. And then he goes on to say, so about the subject matter. He goes, I think this is very funny. This is very Gen X because this is like obviously cusp millennial Gen X kind of time. And he just goes, I'm from a divorced family and so are half the people I know. What a way to open. and I'm watching Daria and Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
I think that says something about the whole American culture. There's this whole breakdown of the family in this country. And even though I don't buy into the whole President George H.W. Bush perpetuated family values bullshit.
Oh, he said that.
It does seem that people today are unable to stick together in an idealistic way for some reason.
Wow.
This is like early to mid-90s kind
of. How old was he? If he was over 30, then I'm embarrassed for him.
No. He was early 20s. Then I forgive. Or mid-20s still.
I forgive it.
Yeah. Remember? He was. I think he was 20 when Gorilla Biscuits really start today, and this was 4 years later.
So. Remember being 25 when you thought having divorced parents meant that you were important?
Yeah. Well, that was so pervasive that my parents are still together, and I was like,
Why?
I'm such a pussy. Because my parents aren't divorced. That was so pervasive that I was like, I'm such a normie. I'm so boring.
You wouldn't get it, Ryan.
Yeah, I felt that internally. No one ever expressed. Oh, actually, you know what? One time this fucking moron, like he was like, oh, you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Like literally because my parents were still together.
Aww.
I remember that. That sits in my brain. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But I love that. I love that angst. I love that fucking.
That's fun.
It's so funny.
Okay. Do you know what? Maybe it's just that there was like a bunch of 25-year-olds making music, and that's why I hate it listening to it as a 41-year-old woman. Do you know, like, at 25, I might have loved it. Your ears change, right? Like, isn't that why they play music really loud in General Pants or whatever the latest version of General Pants is? So that, like,
whoa, we're going full aunt and uncle mode.
So that people my age don't go in. Isn't that a thing?
I know the reverse is true. Like they'll play particular music out the front of like shopping centers so young kids don't hang out. I don't know if it's the reverse in the...
Yeah, they play it really loud.
Right.
So I don't want to go in.
Yeah, that happened to me literally yesterday.
Yeah, so if this album was playing at General Pants, I wouldn't go in.
Right, yeah.
And then I wouldn't wear the cool jeans and the cool they could stay cool.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Keep Arnie Steph off Facebook, you know?
Yes. Yeah. No, get Arnie Steph on Facebook. Arnie Steph belongs on Facebook.
I belong on Facebook.
Keep her off TikTok.
Off TikTok.
Yeah, off TikTok, off Instagram. Yeah.
Got it.
He keeps going on. And again, this is more about I think this is what I was looking for before. We picked up a bunch of stuff from a bunch of people and regurgitated it. Then a bunch of people picked up a bunch of stuff from us and regurgitated it. So we're all part of this big, happy regurgitation. I think this is an interview from 2018, which I think was a 25. Oh, fuck, who cares? But it was another sort of anniversary of this album, and he was doing this interview. But Slip was really intense. From the Heart record. Gorilla Biscuits records were always more fun and optimistic, whereas Slip is way more introverted and cathartic as a form of personal expression. This is the quote I was looking for before. I think there's a real earnestness to it. This is him talking about his own music.
I'm loving that this is him talking.
Because the emotion, commitment, and desperation going into it were all real. There was so much cool stuff happening at the time, but we put our stamp on a certain mix of it with a lot of real emotion and chemistry between all of us.
Okay.
I think what I take from that is, again, it just doesn't happen in a vacuum. And like these major labels, it was called the Major Label Feeding Frenzy for a reason. And there were all of these bands. And there was that quote earlier about how some of these bands were just trying to do too much at the same time in terms of genre.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, Quicksand, it didn't hit commercially, but it hit in a real cultural way.
Yeah.
And I think it was for that reason. It was because they brought this hardcore punk earnestness to what is essentially a post-grunge kind of alt metal album.
Yeah.
Made by hardcore dudes.
Okay.
So it's like the spirit of it combined with this like kind of very, I mean, in the context of hardcore, in the context of time, but an accessible sound, this college rock sound. And so it just was like this perfect storm of elements, maybe.
Yeah. And that's why you love it.
That's why I love it. I think that's why a lot of people love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's why you should love... No, joking.
I need to be 25 to enjoy this album.
Sure. Or have grown up in hardcore bands and stuff, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a band. We were really hardcore. We just weren't like...
We were hardcore jazz.
We were.
What was the name of your band?
We were called the Overhead Project.
Okay, that's very jazz. Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you. And the premise of the band was that we had to write music that was too hard for us to play.
I was in a band like that. I was in a metalcore sort of hardcore band like that. I was like, I just want it to be more and more and more challenging and technical.
Yeah.
And to your point, that doesn't make necessarily for a great song.
No.
No.
There was some great music that came out of that band, but none of it was me.
What was, like, what type of jazz? Are we talking like that? Because I'm not a big jazz person. Like, I'm familiar with jazz, but, like, in terms of saleability, is what you were trying to do similar to, like, Hiatus Coyote, stuff like that? Or was it more like...
I don't know what that is.
They were, like, they're a jazz band, but they kind of had Triple J crossover.
It was, I don't know. It was a lot of odd time.
Okay.
A lot of improvisation.
Was it catchy? Like no. When you were singing, was it like...
Mine had hooks, but the guys didn't like mine.
Yeah, they were... Yeah, okay, all right. I see, that's the thing. Like, I like songwriting. I think there's a lot of songwriting on this record.
Yeah.
Like, I really do. There are choruses, you know what I mean? There's choruses, there's verses, there's structure to all these songs.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting to then, like, take it a level up to you where you're like, there's no hooks.
Yeah.
And to me, like, a lot of the songs on this are quite... catchy and to my ears, but to you, you're like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Maybe I need to give it another listen.
Oh no, I'm not trying to. I would never put that on your stand. to finish us off, I've got a couple of quotes from, literally two quotes from guys that were in equally as influential bands.
Yeah.
So when they did this 30-year re-release, they released a book and it has like kind of like oral history and testimonials from dudes in other bands talking about how important this album was.
Yeah. Basically. Fun.
So the first one is from Wes Isold, who was in a band called American Nightmare / Give Up the Ghost. They went by both names, and he was in.
Why?
I think American Nightmare. It could have been a film. I think it was a film, so it was trademarked and they had to change the name to Give Up the Ghost. And then when they reformed, they just reformed under American Nightmare. And he went on to do this like electro clash band called Cold Cave afterwards. And he's like a poet and all this sort of stuff. He's missing a hand. Pretty cool. So Wes Isold said this about Slip. He said, which I think this is a really interesting quote, because he's like, it's the sound of a genre being left in the dust by the person who perfected it. And in 30 years has never needed the aid of context or perspective.
Wow.
Which is a big quote, and we kind of proved that wrong just by talking about it today, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think for you to listen to this album, you did need the context and perspective.
I
tried to give.
I needed the idealism of youth as well.
Yeah.
So potentially me as a 25-year-old now would have loved it.
Sure. But what I like is that first part about it's the sound of a genre being left in the dust by the person who perfected it, because he's talking about Walter.
Right.
He's talking about Walter, who wrote Start Today, this Gorilla Biscuits album, which, as I said earlier, it's the hardcore album.
Right.
It really is. Even today, I would say, like, if you said to me, as like, what is hardcore? I'd probably be like, look, just listen to this album, start there, and then get back to me if you like it or not. Like,
yeah. And you never heard from me again.
I can give you, you delete me off Facebook. I don't want to talk to Ryan. You delete my number. but he's talking about Walter in that sense. It's like, this guy made such a huge contribution to hardcore music and the hardcore culture and the culture of live shows and stuff. And this album is like, this album is leaving that in the dust. It's so progressive compared to what came before it. But it's more the attitude of what he says. It's like the genre being left in the dust, as if it's like deserves to be left in the dust, which I find is such an interesting common attitude in hardcore, because it's like, oh, all that stuff I did when I was a kid that it was so important to me and that I loved dearly and made me who I am. I resent that shit now because I want to do something more interesting.
Yeah.
The music itself, like artistically, the music is not that interesting. What's interesting about it is the emotion and the personal growth and the character development of it.
Uh-huh.
The music, the actual art itself of these early bands is pretty rudimentary.
Yeah.
And then you get this kind of resentment when you're like 10, 12 years into it, looking back on what you did previously.
That's interesting.
It's interesting because like I look back on it and being like, okay, yeah, the bands weren't great, but fuck, it meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
That's what like that's where I'm at now. I don't really have this same attitude where it's like, yeah, Quicksand Slip left everything in the dust. I'm like, no, it's just another good thing that I get to enjoy.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't know. I like it. I like that just looking at that
it's
attitude.
Very aggressive language.
Yeah. Now, this is a quote from Daryl Taberski, who is in a band called Snapcase.
Okay.
And we will be doing a Snapcase episode for anyone listening.
Yeah.
Like, this is just like washing. I'm so sorry.
I know you're not asking me, but I'm busy. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm listening. This is great.
So what he says about it, and again, Snapcase, another very influential band as far as like hardcore punk goes. That I'm just trying to give you context.
I mean, no, I'm interested.
To all these fucking random names that I'm throwing.
If you didn't, if you didn't give me the context, I would be asking who's that.
Yeah, yeah. Quicksand collectively created a beast that could create that could break from the confines of a traditionalist scene and somehow become adored by that same rigid community, which is kind of an extension of what that other guy was saying. He's sort of saying like. In hardcore, you have all... It's interesting because it's a counterculture. But once you're in it, there are still all these like quite defined rules about what you can and can't do, at least musically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to hear people who are in the scene also acknowledge its kind of drawbacks.
Right.
That's what I find interesting about
so
this
quote. So it broke the rules. Is that what it's saying?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, it's saying that it not only did it break the rules, but it was beloved by the people who kind of made the rules or upheld the rules.
Yeah.
And I think that's a
love
lot
that.
Of yeah, I think that's a lot of where its value comes from and why it changed stuff for bands still operating in that scene. Yeah, after the fact. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I like it. And look, if you're listening and you're like Steph and you've never heard this album, just go give it a go. Listen to Dine Alone, at least. Dine Alone was the big single. That's the song that got me into this band. So give that a look in on YouTube or whatever and make up your own mind. I think it goes without saying, like, if you're listening to this podcast, it helps to have listened to the record we're talking about.
But yeah.
I don't know if everyone does.
Yeah, I don't know if it helped me.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I sent it to you on Messenger or whatever, I tried to give you a bit of context, at least in terms of what it meant for me.
Yeah.
I tried to set you up at least live without kind of ruining the actual record today. But it's still that thing. It's exactly what I said before where it's like if you're not there at the time or if you're not it's the context and perspective. Like Wes Izold says, you don't need it to enjoy this album. I think you really do, and that's the whole point of like what I'm trying to do in this podcast is provide context and perspective to people who weren't a part of this culture. Yeah.
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 It's cool. Yeah. I like that it means a lot to you.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
It's nice to see someone passionate about something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
especially something that's not comedy. It's a real treat.
it's a lot like comedy, though.
I think the scenes
are like.
People. I mean, music and like, I always think of comedy as like jazz, which is so lame, but I do.
I get it. Yeah. I understand it, yeah. It feels lame to say that, but it doesn't make it any less true.
Yeah, you know? I approach it the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah I think my mistake is like I never did approach it the same way as like punk bands because like that was like this, and that's what I'm trying to find now is like there was such a catharsis to playing this type of music.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I know that's not what everyone wants from their own comedy, but I think like that's what I was good at.
Yeah.
So trying to find a way to, like this, again, this sounds almost as bad as like the jazz thing, but I do think it's true. It's like trying to find a way to do like punk comedy.
Yeah.
And it's like, I still want it to be funny. I still want it to be jokes. I still want it to be stand up, but I want it to be like, some sort of catharsis, some sort of like.
Yeah.
Outlet.
Yeah.
Not only for me. I don't want to get more out of it than I never want to get more out of it than the audience. That's the big difference.
Then you will never be a jazz musician.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest difference between.
First of all, you wear shoes. Second of all, you are facing the crowd like an idiot.
You have to invite them into your practice space. They're impinging on your.
This is a song I wrote today. Yeah. I haven't shown the rest of the band yet.
We're going to figure it out.
I don't have chord charts. And it's 24 minutes long.
Enjoy.
Don't enjoy.
We got merch up the back.
If you enjoy, you're not listening properly. Yeah. And that is how I'd perform comedy.
Go see Steph at the festivals, yeah, everybody.
Yeah, you'll love it.
No, well, what I was going to say is, like, I think the big difference between like punk rock and comedy is like for a lot of these bands, and I'd say the same thing about improv as well. Uh-huh. Like, I've done a couple of improv shows where it's like a similar thing where it's like the performance.
That's really embarrassing. You just told people that.
Oh, no, I was a storyteller. I was a stand up on an improv. I didn't have to do improv.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I got paid. Don't worry.
All right.
Don't look at me like that. I was actually really cool and I'm still cool and I didn't actually do improv.
I'm joking. I did an improv course. It's fine.
Improv is great. But the thing I'm trying to get at is like punk rock, the band is definitely getting more out of it. A lot of times the band is getting more out of it than the audience.
That's all art.
But I think that's a trap for comedy. I think that's the thing that sets comedy apart from other art forms.
That's why comedy isn't art, it's entertainment. The end.
Norm McDonald said it's a craft.
I'm kidding.
No, but Norm said it's a craft, it's not an art.
But yeah.
Because it's got a prescribed outcome. Which is laughter.
Yeah, it's entertainment.
Yeah. Whereas punk rock or like any sort of DIY music, like non-commercial music, it's like jazz.
Yeah.
It's an expression.
Yeah.
And the audience takes whatever they take. But for you, the performer, you're like it's a release for you. Yeah. And that is what's interesting to watch about it. But like very rarely do I think I've seen a proper DIY punk band and walked away being like, oh, they performed really great for me.
Yeah.
I'm watching them release something.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And improv is the same thing. You see this look in their eyes where they're like, I need this.
Yeah.
Like, I've been working in IT support all day. I just need to pretend to be a cat for 5 minutes. Yeah. Like, and the audience is like, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We paid $10 and they didn't write anything. Okay, cool. Yeah. That's it. I'm done. I don't have anything else to say.
Okay.
You've got right of reply though if you wanna.
No, thank you for sharing something that meant so much to you with me.
I'm sorry.
It was a real treat.
I feel very under the microscope. I feel under scrutiny doing this podcast. And I've done it myself. I'm not complaining. I do worry that it's boring.
For who?
For you mainly.
It's not boring because I'm learning things.
Nice. I think the audience likes it. You can write it. The complaints department is open, guys, by the way. You can write it.
Don't say my name.
No, yeah, no. Leave Steph out of it. Don't tag Steph in anything. Do not mention. Keep Steph's name out of your filthy fucking mouths, actually. She's had enough of the internet for one lifetime. So best dog joke ever at festivals this year. Melbourne.
Sydney.
Yeah. Newcastle. Adelaide? No, Adelaide.
Just Newcastle. Sydney, Newcastle, Melbourne Fringe. At the moment. No, just randomly.
You're one-off, yeah? Yeah. Cool, nice. At Newcastle Comedy Club?
Yeah.
Guys, if you're listening in Newcastle, go see shows at Newcastle Comedy Club. It's fucking sick. It's good.
Yeah, it's a good club.
Yeah. Everyone says it's the best room in the country, but that's what they say about every room in the country, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a good comedy club.
It's very good.
And you should support them.
Yeah, they're nice guys.
Yeah. I'm doing a show. I'm only doing Sydney. My show is called 13 Jokes. After the Fugazi album, it's like very much on brand. I'm really relying on listeners of this podcast to buy tickets.
Yeah. That's not a good laugh rate for an hour though, Ryan.
Yeah. It's going to be 13 chunks. What I should have called it is 13 chunks. It's not just 13 chunks.
Yeah. Great.
Which obviously that's going to have to be built into some of the material.
It also means you have to get at least 13 laughs.
13 laughs in an hour. I think I could do that.
You say that, but... I have done a lot of silent hours.
Oh, God, yes. It's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah.
At least when you're playing songs, they're forced to clap at the end, right?
I'd love someone to be like doing this at the end. And just be like,
I do.
I counted 12.
I was thinking of doing something like opening with something that isn't quite a joke, but then at the end, finishing it.
Oh, that's fun.
And then we got 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. Some sort of callback, but like very calculated, obviously.
Cute.
So I'm doing that at Sydney Comedy Fest. I'm only doing two nights at this point, but I'll probably take it to Brisbane at some point. Rat Club Comedy. Follow us on Instagram. Come every Monday night.
Good show.
Ryan.d.sim on Instagram. Do you want to?
I don't know what mine is.
Don't follow Steph because she
I mean, you can, but I don't know what my Instagram is.
Just buy tickets to Steph's show. She's a very, very, very funny person and I really I know. I adore you, Sal. I think you're the best. I really, I just think you're absolutely easily one of my favorite comedians. You're one of the first people I met in Sydney when I first came down in 2018, and you were really, really nice to me.
Aww.
Yeah, you've always been a pleasure. I know you talk about how much of a bitch you are, but I'm like, maybe to other people, but you're nice to me.
I give you two things.
Yeah, exactly. I contain multitudes. Yeah. But yeah, no, thank you so much for coming on and listening to me ramble on about this
podcast,
this album. Yeah, awesome. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.